pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'm just going to ask our guests there, when we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance during a meeting, I request that you stand, otherwise you can go sit somewhere other than the main table, because that was inappropriate, in my opinion.
You want me to sit over there?
I don't care, but I just think that when we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, you should stand for the Pledge of Allegiance during a meeting, out of respect for the people running the meeting. Okay, so we're going to do things a little differently tonight. We're gonna have a public comment section at the end of the meeting. There'll be no public comment during the meeting. We're gonna allow a few speakers who have business before us on resolutions who are represented here today. We're gonna ask them if they would like to speak now, and then we're gonna have a representative from the executive's office speak, and then we're gonna get into the resolutions. But first thing, we'll just go through here real quickly, and before we start the resolutions, we'll go through and approve the minutes of the meeting. Do I have a motion there?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
To approve.
Abe.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion that the minutes be amended to reflect my absence at the last meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Yeah. A second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So make a motion to approve the amended minutes?
No. I'll make the motion. Oh. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we have representatives from the D&H Canal, is that correct?
Correct.
And Hudson Valley, the Maritime Museum, is that correct? All right, so let's do the resolution for D&H is 133. You guys can go first and give us a, if you have anything you'd like to tell us.
Sure. I brought for you folks a few sheets. It's just our latest newsletter that we sent out to 3,400 local households telling them where we're at in our project. And then there's also the top sheet, there's two different. The top sheet just relates to the specific measure that you're offering to help fund.
Mm-hmm.
The D&H Canal Historical Society, if you don't know, is with the help of Open Space Institute, New York State Park, and the Park Recreation and Historic Preservation, purchased the Depew Canal House as a home for our new museum back in 2015. That was transformative to the Canal Society, and we've been upping our game and planning this new museum. The current plan would be to put in a visitor center that will celebrate the trail systems. National Historic Landmark, 5 miles walk, and there are an awful lot of local trails that have D&H remains on them, and we're opening up one more as we go along. And we'll have a new museum with the visitor center, and we'll have a museum open, not just seasonally, but full time again. And so the what I passed around was just our latest newsletter that talks about what we've done recently and what our plans are. And then the top sheet is the proposal from our excellent design team.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. And for the Maritime Museum?
Hi, my name is Bob Berhans. I'm a past president of the Hudson River Maritime Museum. There's a few things we'd like to show. One is, as you know, we requested $30,000 and it was approved to help us with a match for our CFA grant. We have a $430,000 consolidated funding application to do some real transformation of our campus, and also to kind of implement a green museum initiative, become more sustainable and more green. I gave you some information when we applied about where we were financially and what we accomplished, and this is a very nice. This was our annual report that we had at our annual meeting in December, and it provides some really nice statistics about where we are and what we accomplished in 2019. Just a couple ideas. We went from, as I said, in 2014, 2015, we went from about a $250,000 museum up to $1 million. Last year, we kind of ran out of wooden boats to renovate, which is not, I guess, surprising. But last year, our revenue was almost $800,000. So we're still doing well. We had about 850 active members, the 2,500 passengers in Solaris's first year on the river, a totally solar powered boat which we built. We received over 3,000 new collection items. We've gone to some of the folks who have helped clean up the river, and mostly they archives when somebody's at it. And we've now gone through Clearwater and Riverkeeper and some of the other ones that are starting to take their materials and ascension them into our collection so we can preserve them going forward. We're great that we have a lot of volunteers, about 1,800 hours total last year at the museum, and we also had over 18,000 visitors. So just a quick summary of what we do last year. The $30,000 that you've agreed to give us is huge for us, because for those of you who know a little bit about state grants, you have to put all the money out up front first, and then you get reimbursed, and there's a 25% match. So your money will represent our match for this year, so that we don't have to limit our programs. We don't have to cut back on our programs and our staff in order to be able to make these capital improvements. I want to just give you one of our events calendars. Lisa likes to say that when she took over as executive director, we had a rack card, which was about this big and had a front on it, and we had about that many things that we were doing for the museum for the entire year, and now we have literally hundreds of activities, lectures, and events at the museum, and we're also very proud that this last January and February we had the museums on Main Street, Smithsonian Institution, Waterways exhibit on loan from them. And so normally the Strand, the Maritime Museum is kind of quiet in January, February, and we had our largest number of visitors to the museum coming to the Smithsonian exhibit. So even in the middle of the winter, we were able to draw people down, and that helped all the businesses and restaurants and other people down here. So we were quite proud of that. So if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them, but thank you for this beginning. I mean, we're going to have at least, you know, $430 is a lot of money for us to spend, so it's going to take us a few years to do it. But thank you for the first year of match that was very generous.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then Ms. Wright from the executive's office is going to talk to us a little bit about the Housing Advisory Committee.
Yeah, so the legislators should have a sheet that I passed around. Did everybody get one of those? So just a little background here. At the last meeting of this committee, we discussed issues around putting together a housing committee, forming a housing study. It was, I think, a shared sense of urgency about this, as well as some debates about do we really want to slow down long enough to do a study. We've also been discussing these things in the county executive office and with the planning department and other departments. We share the sense of urgency about this. This was at the top of our agenda as well for this coming season. And so after the county executive had some conversations with the chair of the legislature, I had some conversations with Legislator Cahill, we think we can stand up this committee and get this study going in a more nimble and efficient way through the executive office than through a legislative committee. So we have adopted a very similar design to the committee as was in the resolution. I guess that was resolution
nine.
So we would like to go ahead. We're planning to go ahead and proceed with this. You know, we run several advisory committees a year. A lot of them staffed out of the planning department on various planning department studies. This is something we do all the time, and we can do it very efficiently. So what you have in front of you is the advisory committee would advise on the scope of the study for the county housing trends and needs and strategy options, evaluate the study's findings, really go out and conduct public outreach and stakeholder interviews on what our housing needs are, what the obstacles are to increasing our housing supply and decreasing our housing costs. Really think it's important to have these conversations in every part of the county. We have housing needs in every part of the county, although they differ from place to place and from population to population. And we think that those conversations are very important, both from the sense of gathering information as well as a sense of initiating action. So the committee would then define and evaluate strategies to increase our supply of housing really across different categories of housing needs, including a range of affordable housing for young families, seniors, and the workforce, and make recommendations that ultimately go into the county's comprehensive plan around housing. We're looking at the design of the committee to include a representative from a housing-focused organization, someone from the development community, whether that's a development company or an architecture company that works with those companies, a realtor, someone from the business community who can really speak to the economic development implications of our current housing shortage. You know, this is an issue that's really affecting our economy. A representative from municipal government, one representative from the community, which could be a community group that's working with folks in the community on housing needs, and one representative from the legislature. The appointments would be split. The chair of the legislature would appoint the legislative representative and two of the members, and then the county executive would appoint the remaining members. And we're looking at a study that will be a fairly quick turnaround. We don't want to drag this out, as we talked about last time at this meeting. Really, we know that there's a really serious need, and we want to get down to action. We see the study as really about giving us all a common basis in data that we understand to define the problem. Really is a jumping off point for the conversations about what can we do at the county level, what can we do at the municipal level, what can we do at the community level, because it's going to take all of those levels to solve the problem, and it's important that we all start from a common point of view. So the study is going to look at the key drivers of our current affordability crisis in Ulster County, including looking at changes in the regional housing patterns and housing market, trends in rents and home sale prices, and the growth in short-term rentals and second homes and the role that that has played. Assessing at the municipal level what is the affordability gap in each municipality, so just getting a sense, you know, municipality by municipality, what is the need and how do they differ across the county. Assessment of what we've done. The county last put out a housing strategy in 2006, and we have actually executed most of the things on that strategy, and yet here we are. So we want to just take a look at what action plan we put in place then, what we've done, what we haven't done, and why that hasn't been enough as a way of informing what we do next. And then making recommendations for county housing strategies, including looking at some tools that weren't available the last time we did this look. And then these recommendations will be really the starting point for the committee to take around the county in its stakeholder discussion processes and build from there. And then on the back side, I just want to point out that we're not going to be sitting around and waiting for the study to be done before we do anything. So at the last committee meeting, we talked about two things that we can go ahead and pursue in parallel in conjunction with the legislature, and that's looking at the this year's foreclosure eligible list for properties that can be put back into housing. This year, we can look at routing them through a nonprofit for redevelopment. So we pull them from the foreclosure list and offer them for sale to nonprofits that can redevelop them for the back taxes. In future years, as we evaluate a land bank as one of the possible strategies, that same process might be used in conjunction with a land bank. And then the home rule request that we discussed last time about amending our shovel-ready policies so that they can be used. So, you know, we're not going to be pausing action until the study is done, and we can continue to add to this list of things that we pursue in parallel. So that's what we have in mind and what we think is going to be the most efficient way to go about this process.
If I may, Chair.
Sure.
Request that farmer and farm worker housing also be included as part of this, because I know it's a tremendous problem regionally, and you know, we're seeing more folks wanting to be here, not only is the cost of land very expensive in Hudson Valley, but so is housing.
Yeah, thanks. That's a good addition to call out specifically on here as a category of need.
Great. Thank you.
In terms of the scope of the study, would it be possible to also include studying policies of other county-type yeah. municipalities that have had success with yeah. this issue?
Yeah.
And currently it's a 7-member committee, so if you're going to add farming, you're going to add another one or two people to this, and is it determined who's going to choose what, I mean, what who is the chair of the legislature choosing, other than the legislator, for the other two, and do we have a sense of how that's being divvied up, and who's chairing the committee, and...
I do not think we've gotten that far in our discussions.
Yeah, I mean, so this is kind of like, if I can, if you guys don't mind if I say a couple words. So this is kind of like, you know, a way to use the depth and the breadth of the executive's office to support what we're trying to do here. If we just, you know, go forward with creating a committee, we'll just become an advisory committee with no ability to really enact anything and no ability to get the executive's office to do things, right? So I just feel like it would be a much more successful endeavor if we worked in conjunction with the executive office to and the legislative branch of the government to do this together, right? And solve the problem together, because it's a problem that we're all responsible for, right? And it was really, Ms. Wright said, it was brought to the forefront by the executive office, but it's also been brought to the forefront by this legislature for many, many years, right? And so I just think it's a good opportunity that we now have a willing partner in the executive's office who's going to put their money where their mouth is and help us get to the next step, which is, you know, trying to solve this problem. And, you know, assigning people tasks you know, basically being able to rate them and judge them and grade them on how they're doing, right? I just think it's important that we partner with the executive's office rather than try and go it alone, you know. I think there's more strength with all of us than just, you know, us as a body.
Yeah. I agree with what Chairman Cahill said, and also... I would like to ask about the timeline for when we might. So I assume this would be a resolution that we would see in the next cycle, or would you act executively to just put this in place?
Yeah, we can just act to put it in place.
So would we have to? Do we? Would it?
So it doesn't require a resolution. The executive office can do this without us, right? They can do this and just leave us on the outside going like this, right?
Right.
And so the intent of the chairman and, you know, in conversation with the chairman and the executive office is to do this together, right? And I believe he will present a resolution to form the committee anyway, right, even though he doesn't have to.
I think we determined it would be best to just... go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. we can agree on the procedures for appointing people, but I think we felt that it would be best to just get moving.
So what type of timeline before members are chosen? And
I think we want to move ahead on this as quickly as we can. You know, we've started brainstorming possibilities. We need to have that conversation about, you know, who's going to appoint which members and in what order. I think, but I think we can move ahead on this in the next couple of weeks.
Right. So
we're working on drafting a scope for the study and getting that going as well.
So any other legislators have any questions?
So will resolution number 9 be withdrawn?
Well, that's we'll take that up during the resolutions. I think that's going to be up to the sponsors, you know, to determine whether they want to do that or not, or whether they want to postpone it or table it, or you know, for the time being, and see how things pan out. I think it's important to note, though, that there's been some comments made that, you know, the legislature is stalling and just trying to stall. We're just trying to not take action. But I don't think that's the case. I think it's the opposite. I think we've been very proactive, and we've engaged the executive office to try and help us to achieve this goal. using, like I said, you know, they have the ability to do a lot of things that, as a legislature, we don't. We don't have the staff. We don't have all the departments. We don't have the planning department at our disposal.
Yeah.
And the expertise every single day, you know, the executive office does. And, you know.
Implementation, too. They have to implement it.
Right. So, yeah. So they, you know, like I said, you know, he's the boss, you know, and he can, you know, make people do things, right? And I think that's really important, you know. And I just honestly think that allowing us to work together, right, with our members on the board and having a say, right, and of course we're going to discuss as a legislature who is going to be our appointees on that board. It's not going to be decided by a couple of people. We're going to decide it in our caucus, and we'll see, you know, and hopefully get the support from the other side and go forward with that, you know.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful also if we're, you know, this is great, kind of outlining the areas of focus, but I also would hope that we have something that says, okay, and here is how we're doing follow-up. Here's a check-in, what's transpired, what's been done, a process whereby we can, as whether it is the economic development or we look at it from another perspective, but
yeah.
A check-in saying, yes. Here's an update, here's where we're at, here's what's going on. And I think that should be, because everybody else is going to get debriefed, it would be great for this body to get debriefed as progress is being made so that, you know, and in advance so that if others are interested in coming to the meeting because it's a topic that's important to them, they're going to get a sense of what's happened, what's the update, etc.
Yeah, I think regular reports to this committee would make a lot of sense.
Right.
That would be great. Thank you.
Go ahead, Laura. Yeah.
Thank you. Some of the other committees, it's difficult to find minutes online. Will this committee have a clerk and be posting?
That's a good question.
Minutes?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we aren't involved or we don't come to the Economic Development Committee, because I'm not on this one,
right.
But we would be able to take a look at what's going on that way.
Yeah, I would say that would be a request that I would give the executive office that we do post the minutes of this committee when it's formed, so everybody has access to them. The public, everybody wants to see this. You know, we want to solve this problem. We want to work towards solving it. It's not like we don't. We do. We want to get to the bottom of this and do what we can. I mean, we're very limited as what we can do anyway as a government, but what we can do to make it better, we should do, right? And that's actually what we're trying to do here is just move it forward. John Parody hit a nerve with me the other night, you know, a month ago. He did. I'll be honest, you know, when he said, you know, we did a study however many years ago, and what happened with that? Well, you know what? You're right. Nothing happened with that. Let's see. Some things did happen. I take it back. I know some people get offended when I say that. but from a public perception, nothing happened, right? So what the public sees is, you know, it was just another committee. Well, that's not going to happen here. You know, we're not going to allow that to happen here, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where communication's critical. And we know you do a lot there, Dennis, so this is not a slam. But to say that sometimes there's a lot of good work that gets done, and we're not the best at, and I'm the collective we. This is, you know, government is not good at communicating what it is we're doing, why it's important to the community, etc. And I think that if we can start to, even in this case, because this is such a hot topic with everyone, not just in government, but our constituency, where we can communicate in a manner that is more broad and getting people to understand the progress we're making, I think can be very
And I think it's also important that we start publicizing some of the things that the county has done already, you know, and throw that out there. I mean, certainly, the counties, certain municipalities anyway, have been very successful in building affordable housing and workforce housing, right? And I think that we should be talking about that, right? That's part of our success stories over the years, right? But this one, you know, again, we're going to start that way, and each step of the way, we will, you know, toot our own horns here, right?
You know, and I'll just say this as an aside, in the real estate business, we've not had... we don't have sufficient inventory to meet the demand, but at multiple levels, except for maybe the high end. but you know, in the sweet spots, it's really difficult. Entry level, first time home buyers, those that are looking, you know, to start a family home, etc. So, and we have not seen a lot of build since 08. I mean, when 08 hit, everything here dried up. And so, I mean, even thinking about initiatives or incentives to start to attract opportunities, and again, you know, Dennis, we had this conversation about Main Street Ad Court. How do we do live work? How do we look at potentially developing our communities as walkable communities with live work and places for as you're aging out, etc. So, I mean, I think it's a huge undertaking, but it has great application across this county in different parts. It's one item is more important than the other, but. It's
I think one thing we do, though, is we look at the town of Ulster and say, this is what we don't want to do. Anyway, go ahead, Lynn. I'm sorry. We're going to have to let the public afterward. That's when we'll have public comment.
And just to follow up on Legislative Archer, I was reading an article. I mean, it seems to be the trend is more people are renting. And North Carolina, they were building this beautiful multi-family dwellings. You know, they couldn't get property quick enough. Mm-hmm. So I do find it interesting that there is a real estate and housing development committee person in the county executive's proposal.
Okay. So, is there any other questions for Ms. Wright here? And otherwise, we'll go ahead.
In future, when we're using language to describe this, I would draw a distinction between a representative from a housing development and a representative from a housing developer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, clearly.
Because a representative from a housing development is very different.
It's the Kingston Housing Authority.
Housing Development Company.
Right, but yeah, sure.
Thank you. One of the things that we did offer, to make a presentation to the committee in terms of things that we've done and some of the readily available data with respect to housing. And I don't know whether the committee wants that or doesn't want
that. So we'll do that. We'll put that on agenda for next month, Dennis. Would that be okay with you? Is that all right? Are you guys okay with that?
Sure.
Get a little bit more background as we move forward here?
Okay.
Okay, so if there's no other questions for Ms. Wright, we're going to move on with the agenda and start in with resolution number 8.
Before we start,
yes.
Security downstairs just wanted to tell somebody who has presents in the back of their hatch, they got to close the hatch for you, but the car's got locked. So if they're valuable presents, maybe Christmas presents, I don't know, is there boxes in the back of a hatch? So he closed the hatch for you, but
what
it's not
car?
They didn't say.
They're probably going across the street.
I think it was parked alongside here. Where
thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good evening. Thank you.
There was a thing over
there. Ask him what.
I don't have a
hatch. I'm going down there.
Yeah, right. So there's three presents in a car, you say.
There was.
Funny how, look at how these guys go. The not-for-profit's not to make a profit.
See how I can clear for him.
Awesome. The not-for-profits know how to make a profit. Okay, so we're going to start with resolution number 8, setting a public hearing on proposal number 1 of 2020, a local law requiring that property owners of, it's been amended to say, residential rental properties located in Ulster County with 6 or more units have an office in Ulster County. To be held on April 14th, 2020 at 6 p.m. I'll make a motion to open this for discussion.
Second.
Okay. Anybody have anything to say?
Want me to go ahead?
Yeah.
I had a conversation with Legislator Petit with regards to this. Well, I've got a number of concerns from a municipal perspective. There's home rule. We have building inspectors in each of the communities. They set their own laws, and that while there could potentially be a value of something at the county level, I really feel that we need to have a better sense. Every community is different, and so a law that has an overarching set of numbers per unit, et cetera, may work in Kingston, may work in Esopus, may work in Ulster, but it may not work in Rochester. It may not work in, you know, any of our other communities. And so before we move on something like this, Legislator Petit and I talked about going to the Association of Town Supervisors and having a conversation about this and talking about what works, what the reason why it's being put in, what challenges are out there, is this something that could be of value, mm-hmm. and get mm-hmm. some feedback from them before we move forward with something that's going to impact them, and not really understanding what's happening across all of the communities in mm-hmm. Ulster County.
I mean, so some of these communities are I won't say successful, but they're certainly active, right? I know, you know, I'll say this every meeting, probably get sick of hearing it, but I know the town of Ulster, it does a pretty good job of monitoring their properties, right? So it may be an opportunity for the town of Ulster folks to get with a town that's not so aggressive and say, here's what we're doing to solve these problems, right? And I know each municipality, as Legislator Arch said, is unique. Some have mm-hmm. much, much different issues. You know, I mean, ours are suburban issues, but if you go out in Denning, you know, these are septic tank issues and things like that.
And rural issues, and the size of the rental units there are right. very different than what right. you see elsewhere. And so if we're going to put something, I guess the whole intent, and we had this conversation, was if we're going to put something in place, let's make sure it makes sense for all of the municipalities. There is home rule. They do, you know, they have the ability to set their own codes, their own building codes. Their inspectors are very clear on what their roles are. I would not want to put something in place that's not going to add value to what they're doing. And I think that's the important piece.
Anyone else want to add?
Yeah, I like that idea, and I would say in light of that, the home rule component and understanding what the local municipality leaders are doing, I would love for them to provide input on the enforcement mechanism. That's where I have concerns about this, regarding the use of the sheriff or the sheriff's office or the executive. Potentially there's a conflict there, but more importantly, if there's an enforcement mechanism in these local communities that the people that are currently doing inspections are participating in that conversation as well. So I just ask that also be highlighted.
Go ahead.
I would like to add, this was not written so much with the intention of helping the building inspectors out. It was for the residents that are renting from absentee landlords to provide them with a means to get in touch with somebody locally. I mean, that was the biggest issue in several large complexes. I believe there were six that were purchased. The offices within those complexes were closed, and there wasn't any way to contact the property manager. I'm not so sure, not knowing specifically building code, you know, if a stain on the carpet or a malfunctioning freezer would be a reason for the building inspector to go out. I had talked to legal services. I had talked to a local, you know, he does litigation for physical, right, and they were pretty excited about having an office for these people is established in Ulster County. So there's other perspectives to look at it. Mm-hmm. You are correct. I've been to several meetings for tenants who have not been able to get in touch with landlords to have things fixed. Town of Ulster has been very active, but to the point where she's out there once a week.
Twice a week.
Yeah. So she's busy.
Yeah.
And in Esopus, we had to take them to court because they were non-responsive.
Right, and town also brought the same folks to court, and they were found guilty and paid a fine.
Yeah.
Right, so there is a mechanism, I think, to the point of the home rule,
right.
is that there is a mechanism in place to enforce these laws, and there is a process for local municipalities to take, and I think, you know, it might be a good idea for us to encourage them to start doing their job, right? And not, you know, foisting it on the county legislature to, you know, force them to do what is really their responsibility in their own towns, right? I really believe, like, you know, the home rule is very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. I think that each municipality should be given an opportunity to, to understand how grave the problem is in some areas and to react. Right.
So could I don't know, we don't have legal counsel here. Could a municipality then say they have to have it in the county? Or would it have to be within the borders of Esopus, Ulster?
Well, it's the town laws.
They could only do it within their borders.
Right.
So if someone had six or seven properties throughout the county, they would then have to have six or seven.
It depends on the town law.
To the rules of the six or seven towns, municipalities, yeah, where they occupy. That's the nature of home rule and the nature of building code. Everybody has a local building code and has the ability to enforce it, regardless if it's one entity with multiple sites. They are subject to the sites where the apartment building is.
So they could, in theory, have to have multiple offices.
Well, I think if the municipalities adopted similar legislation to what's let's take, for example, the radius, right? That you have to have an office with a certain radius. Doesn't mean that office, my understanding is that the office wouldn't need to be located within the municipality, but there being a rental property within the municipality would require an office to be located within a certain radius, even if that radius is in the neighboring town. Right, so that would be my understanding.
Yeah, I think, I think it's, you know, it would be a good idea. I think the Association of Towns is a great idea, and just let them know, you know, thing is, I know they're aware of it. They know there's problems, right? And so, you know, we're just going to encourage them to act on them and take care of their business, you know? I mean, it really is their business, you know? It's their business to take care of their towns. People are paying, I pay tax dollars for them to take care of the properties around me. I live right across the street. I live right at the entrance of Sunset Gardens, right? And, you know, I'm paying a lot more taxes than the folks who are going in and out of there, right? And the people, probably, than the owners, right? I mean, per square foot, right? So, it's important. And I think that the towns are better suited to do this anyway, in my opinion. You know, we would, thinking about it, right? If we're saying the sheriff's department or some other office in the county, what training do they have to do this? What is their, where does the scope of their authority end and start, right? Do they have the ability to, go into someone's home if it ends up being a home office, right, where this is taking place? Do they have the ability to, just do random, searches or whatever, however you want to phrase it, to see if these people are complying? I don't know that they do, right? So there's some more issues there as well that have to be explored, in my opinion.
Can I just ask where the six came from in lieu of the multifamily?
Yeah, that came from, we were trying to standardize it. Originally, last year it was at 20 to address the larger multifamily dwellings. When the city of Kingston was doing their survey, six seemed to be the number, especially for rent stabilization. So, and I've got input from both Town of New Paltz, Tennessee Associations, and the City of Kingston.
Okay.
And that was the number they prefer,
right,
to show support for.
Because the New York State definition on the multi-dwelling is three or more.
Right,
and
that's
then
how we pulled it up in the county. That code 411 was, there's 962
right,
three or more multifamily dwellings in the county.
Right, New York State requires that minimally every 2 years you have to do fire inspections of multi-dwellings, three or more, which requires a municipality to have the fire inspector have a list.
Oh, that's right. This is what you do.
Yeah. That's the answer.
Which require the building department, the fire inspector, and or the fire inspector's secretary to have a list of the landlords and or contact information in each department. And in my case, I'm all the same. I'm the fire inspector and the building inspector. So my secretary has that list of multi-dwellings, three or more. I have all my landlords, all my phone numbers, all my contact information, and that all goes through my office. So
complaints come to your office as well, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So you know exactly who to call, who to go to get it resolved.
Correct. We have that list. So that list is generated by New York State mandatorily. Mm-hmm. Again, it's every 2 years, mandated by New York State every 2 years, and or home rule could take it and do it every year. We in Marlboro, we stay within the 2 year mandate by New York State, but that actually gives me my list. It generates my list of who my contact is. That I get in touch
three or more.
Three or more. Multi-dwelling.
Right, so that's half of.
Well, that's why I said, that's why I just wondered where the six came from. Because yeah, when multi-dwellings crossed out, multi-dwelling, by New York State definition, is three or more, which gives the building inspector, fire inspector authority to enter
any facility with three or more multi-dwelling.
So the state statute gives the local municipality to do this already.
Absolutely.
To do all of this already.
Mandated 2 years,
mandated
have to.
To register each one of the landlords. Right?
Correct.
And they
and a contact person.
With correct. A contact person. So, I mean, there's a redundancy here in my mind, you know, with knowing that, you know, there are local... it's part of the local now. Is every town as efficient as yours? Probably not, right? And this is where the education comes in. This is where we would rely on the municipalities in the county that are doing it correctly to educate the other ones and say, you know, here's where the problems are, right?
Well, that's the Association of Supervisors is intended to do just that, share insight and, you know, things they've tried and worked and what hasn't. And, you know, so it's an opportunity. It's a platform for that discussion.
And it just changed. Yeah.
Right? And some of the towns have gone beyond that. Some of the towns have gone beyond that 1 year, that 2 year annual inspection have gone to 1 year. And some of the towns have gone beyond inspection to also require licensing. So they license those facilities, which gives them the opportunity to essentially charge a fee for those inspections, as well as to look and deal with required improvements. Last but not least, there's a number of state laws that are being considered at the Senate level to improve enforcement. Those include essentially increased penalties for repeat offenders for building code violations. And so there's other ways that you can see this that you could approach it at a county level in terms of trying to improve the conditions of tenants to essentially address to meet their landlords to have their conditions. Their conditions fixed. There's also a livability standard that basically says that apartments have to be livable. And then there's heat standards, et cetera, that kick in, mm-hmm. all of which are under the control of the local building inspector.
Right.
So through the chair then, yes. Should all the tenants be directed to get in touch with their local building inspectors if they have a problem with their refrigerator or stained carpets? Or
absolutely.
Do you want all those calls? And the heat as well?
I get them anyway, so I mean...
you start to see trends where there are problematic landlords not following up, right? So you know where the problems are.
Listen, as soon as I get the call, I know the landlords on speed dial. There's a certain one, so, and there's others that I never get a phone call.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm going to believe that's standard in most towns with the inspectors. Again, me being the fire inspector and building inspector, my municipality is a lot easier. In some municipalities, that joint
separate.
Could be separate, right, as far as the authority within. So my authority, again, in a multi-dwelling, three or more, allows me access to that apartment. You know, pretty much they have to allow me in. One and two family dwellings, they don't have to allow me in. Mm-hmm. But once you go multi-dwelling, under the definition three or more, you know, I have to get in. They have to allow me in.
Let's say you should tell.
Yeah. So I did want to draw a distinction, though. Like, what we're describing right now is how a tenant would, or how an issue that violates code would be remedied, right? Which is through inspection and enforcement of the inspection. The what we're talking about with the office, the on-site office, is how a tenant would seek their own remedy, right? So that's a little bit different here. I do like the idea of, because what we want is safe housing for tenants, right? Like, that's the purpose of this whole thing. And I think in a way to say, if there's more that we can be doing to increase the effectiveness of the or the enforcement mechanisms or the penalties for violating the standards, I think that's what we should be doing. I think it's a little bit, and I don't say this to disparage the legislation, but I think it's a little bit of a cop-out for us to say, well, we're not going to do that, but we are going to make sure that you have someone that you can go talk to. What we should be doing is we should be making sure the houses are inspected and that they're up to code. And I would rather we focus on that than making sure that the tenants have someone that they can talk to that's within a certain radius, when really who they need to be talking to is the building inspector when there's a violation, who gets them in there. So it's kind of sending the tenants in the wrong direction, in my opinion. When if there's a violation, there should be a remedy for that should go through the current building inspection process. And on the topic of the building inspection process, I do want to ask Legislator Corcoran, when if you need to go into a space, and it's and you don't you can't have access to that. Who do you deal with to get inside the physical dwelling if there's a locked door?
On the multi-dwelling?
On the multi-dwelling.
On the owner.
But I'm saying, let's say the owner is let's say a tenant says, I don't have access to such and such, or such and such unsafe condition is present, and you can't get in because no one's present there. Do you get a warrant, or what is that?
I'm just want to understand. So the tenant has a problem.
Yeah.
I've always encouraged them to deal with the owner directly first.
Right, which is kind of the thing of the legislation.
Correct, that's the point. Deal with the owner first.
Right.
If that fails, then you contact me. And then in that case, I contact the owner. And the owner, 95% of the time, allows me access, you know, to that apartment. Because, again, if there's a problem, and he's, again, listen, is it the tenant right 95% of the time? Sure. But the landlord is okay 5% of the time. If, you know, that stained carpet. I mean, is that a violation of code? Somebody spilled grape juice on the carpet. I go in, I say, clean the carpet. I mean, I'm not going to go after the landlord and basically take him to court over that.
But you've never had an issue where you need to get, like, the sheriff involved? Right?
I've never had that issue. I mean, again, I'm in Marlboro. The city of Kingston, town of Newburgh, I mean, the larger cities, city of Poughkeepsie, can that become an issue? Maybe, but... Again, between the tenant themselves, who's making the complaint, who's always willing to let you in,
right.
All right, I'm getting in, and then again, above and beyond that, you know, again, I usually don't get to the owner because the tenant's going to let me in. I never have a problem getting in because they're the complainant. The complainant always wants you in. Some of the problems, right? But some of the problems I have, and I tell them, is that they complain after the fact. They have the problem with the landlord. They have no satisfaction. They move out of the apartment, then they file the complaint. Mm-hmm. And now, since they vacated the apartment, they don't have the legal right to let me in anymore.
Right.
So I've got to go through the landlord. Now, the landlord could basically deny me, and then I could have to go through a court process to have him get me in on that multi-dwelling. But if the tenant vacates the property, no longer has ownership, they say, of that apartment. But once they're there, the complaint, again, if they're complaining, I'm getting in.
Right.
You know, and I'm getting in, doing a sweep of that apartment, and then basically validating how bad that issue is and how bad I have to deal with the owner.
Thank you. Any other discussion? So, Legislator Petit.
I mean, we're kind of, you know, I understand. I would like to go to the Town Supervisors Association. I have reached out to the new chair, Shannon Harris. To see if we can get on the agenda, and hopefully it coincides with your schedule too, Legislator Archer. So I don't mind postponing it.
Okay.
You know, again, we're conversations going towards enforcement. Again, I would like the tenants to have a means instead of, because at some point, some of these tenants are very afraid even to make initial contact because they feel threatened that they're going to lose their apartment. Most
absolutely
of
threatened Sunset Garden tenants.
So if they keep calling up the building inspector, you know, because of a refrigerator issue, I'm sure at some point a problem tenant wouldn't have their lease renewed. Whereas you would prefer, I'm sure, to have them reach out to the owner.
And
first.
Is that some of the laws that the Senate is putting in place
also,
this year to
it's
protect
also a fair
that.
Housing issue as well?
Right, yeah. So there's remedies
so
there.
I would like time to do more research. I'm sorry.
I'll make a motion to postpone Resolution 8.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Okay, on to Resolution number 9. So, Resolution number 9 is establishing a special committee to define Ulster County housing needs.
Yeah, I would just, on this topic, I very much like the proposal coming from the county executive's office, having the staff, the manpower, the expertise to act in an execution role with the legislature still being involved, I think is the way to go, rather than acting in an advisory capacity. So, you know, my recommendation would be to push that forward as quickly as we can, implore the county executive's office to move quickly, and I know that you hear that cry, and I appreciate it. And in that instance, I don't think that we need a legislative committee.
So, Legislator Petit, would you be willing to postpone this for a couple of months to see how things settle down, and if, you know, we'll take it from there?
Or you could just take no action on it. If nobody moves it's just no action for tonight.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, what is the timeline if we take no action as opposed to tabling,
if we take no action,
it stops, right?
Yeah.
if we take no action, it's the same as the timeline is becomes the same as postponing. But if we take no action with your approval, then we go back to
the beginning.
It starts
beginning.
Over again.
Yeah. Like the last resolution we postponed with your approval.
Right.
So there's no time running on it.
Okay.
You know, so let me just make a statement. You know, so to me, these are pretty similar issues, right? Resolution 8 and 9, right? We're talking about problems with housing in the county, right? And I think that we've demonstrated that we're ready to take on these challenges and ready to take it on as a problem and work towards solving it, right? In a partnership with the executive's office, right? And I just think, like I said, in our previous meeting, give us a chance. Just give us a chance and see if we perform. If we don't perform, you know what? I'll start the meeting and I'll let you guys come in here and talk as much as you want for as long as you want until you get it off your chest if we didn't perform, right? But I believe that we will. And I believe that, you know, we're going to succeed in having some progress here. Who knows what it'll be? Because we don't even know what the issue is yet, really. But when we do get to that point, I think we will be successful.
So I'll make a motion to postpone resolution number 9.
And that's with Legislator Petit's approval?
Second.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to go to...
Well, we had a motion, we had a...
I'm sorry, let's take a vote. Are all those in favor?
Aye.
Sorry. You know, we've been here an hour already. We're getting to resolution number 3. Sorry. Okay. So, resolution number 99 is reestablishing the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee, Ulster County Legislature. So now is that the...
That was the question that had come up. I don't know if any, but we have folks here from, they were from the trail.
Yeah.
But,
right.
Yes. That was the one that there had been a question last night.
Right. So there was a question last night brought up in a, I don't know what committee it was.
Public Health.
Public Health, yeah.
Should we move it to discussion?
I'll move it for a second.
Okay.
In favor?
All right. Well, to discuss, you don't have to move. You don't have to vote. You just...
All right, so go ahead.
In conversation, I actually talked to a few people and got a sense of what I see the issue was from last night, and it circled around the first whereas, and I think the whole intent is that we have an integrated trail system, and there's the Walk Hill, there's all these different trails, and so while we're talking about a specific study, at the end of the day, the whole committee, advisory committee, addresses all of the trails. And I think it would help people to just have a better understanding of what this group does if we take out the first whereas and then just go from there. Because it's all trails. It's not any one trail. UND was a study on a specific issue that got us to the point of an integrated trail system. It's old history. At the end of the day, we already have a commitment on an integrated trail system. We're moving forward, and the trail advisory is representative of multiple trails. And I think that would just add clarity.
Steve, how do you feel about that?
I agree that if you took that one out and maybe one or two of the others that reference back to that particular study, that you would clean this language up. This has been brought forward since 2013, and nobody's had the time to do the housekeeping on it. So
well, and it takes a new legislator who's looking at it with a different set of eyes, which I think is valuable.
So. Yeah, I mean, I was one of the reasons that it was held up in public health last night, and you know, my hesitation was that we're talking about a committee that focuses on trail development in Ulster County, and that alone. That is the purpose of this committee. That's something that is really close to my heart. I worked as a bike mechanic for 5 years in New Paltz at the Bicycle Depot. I rode probably every one of the 100 miles of carriage roads that are on the Shangum, ridge, and I really want our legislation creating a trail committee to be about trails and trails. So that was my hesitation, and I would be very, very happy to push this forward with that amendment, or that with that first whereas pulled out of it.
Well, I'm here. I'm also happy to answer any questions about how we staffed it the way we are, and where we are with personnel and people around the county. Specifically, the improvement this year is we've added someone to represent the equestrian community as well as water trails community. So we've expanded that, and I've also expanded our geographical representation to include Gardner and Point South, because the Wallkill Valley Rail Trail heading south is going to become very important in the prison issues.
I'm sorry, but we're going to just hold off on the public comment until later.
Fine.
I'm sorry. I wish I'd known you wanted to speak on this earlier prior to the meeting starting.
Any questions you have, I'm happy to.
All right, thanks. Sorry about that. I just want to be fair about things, right? Okay.
I'd like to thank Steve and Kevin and Kathy for the work that you do. You're tirelessly working there, and it's appreciated.
Yes. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So make a resolution to amend it, removing the first whereas and the eighth whereas.
Second.
And that just cleans up the...
And the fifth, yes. We do accept that as a
Yes, anything that refers to that original
first,
study.
First, fifth, and eighth.
So we'll just strike those three. Can you second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Thanks for catching.
So then I move that we adopt the amended resolution.
And I'll second.
Okay, in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. So then we're going to move on to Resolution 104, authorizing the chair of the county legislature to execute an intermunicipal shared service agreement with the City of Kingston for economic development services for the Department of Economic Development.
No.
Second.
Any discussion?
I thought that we did this already, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not in this session, but... is this a new thing, or is this already in place?
No, this is not already in place.
This is not, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we need tourism.
When you say this, do you mean this shared services agreement, or actually do these services?
I'm talking about the act of an intermunicipal agreement. The act of working intermunicipally with the city on economic development services. I guess it might be helpful to just hear a description of what that looks like.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, and we had a conversation at a meeting when we were reviewing this, looking for who's on the committee. You know, just some information, because if there is an advisory committee, I think, isn't that what this was? This was part of the Intermunicipal Advisory Committee. We had asked for a list of who's on the committee.
Oh, the Shared Services Committee?
On the Shared, yep.
Ah, that information I don't have. I know that committee's been meeting and...
Right, and we had asked for, it supposedly met three times to discuss and look at this particular shared, and it has to go through this committee before it gets approved, correct? Did I get this right?
Yes.
And we had asked for some additional information.
I didn't understand that you wanted it before tonight.
Okay. Yeah, it was part of being a... the intent was to bring it to committee so that we would have the information with which to make the decision.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that was information that you wanted in general, but I didn't realize you needed it before tonight. Mm-hmm.
So do you want to postpone it? Do you want to wait for... can you get it to us?
Well, then it's going to wait another month.
Right.
I mean, this is something that's been being done, I think, fairly routinely. There's already been several of these that have been executed. And I don't think this was asked before about this.
We were more than willing to bring the information that you requested to the committee, and I would just ask that you consider passing it on. And then if
I understand.
Okay.
The whole intent here, though, is you had a shared service committee that's been three meetings talking about this, looking at this. We just were curious as to who's on the committee, how does the process work, and we even talked about, did they have any other shared service projects that they were looking at? So it was a question, it was something we were trying to gain some insight. I get that the Office of Economic Development had already been operating and supporting businesses in Kingston as issues came up. So I get all of that. So I think it was more about understanding your process around shared service projects and how you look at them. And that's what we were looking for more information.
All right. Well, Tim is back in the office tomorrow, and mm-hmm. I can get all of the information from
okay.
him.
Okay. That would be helpful.
Thank and this you. Is revenue coming into the county, correct?
Right.
Yeah. At one time.
So
it's one time.
One time, yeah.
And also shared services.
Yeah, so I'm
bored that they filed with the state.
I'd be comfortable moving this forward.
Yeah, I would be as well. It was just that there was an expectation. That's
right.
All.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we could get that by our caucus,
yeah,
that would probably be fine, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem.
Okay.
Did we move it?
So I missed who moved and seconded it.
Pardon me?
I'll move that we adopt, that we approve it.
And do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We're going to do 105 now, which is authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a grant disbursement agreement with the New York State Urban Development Corporation, doing business as Empire State Development.
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 106 is amending the 2020 county budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Urban Development Corporation, DBA, Empire State Development, Ulster County Planning Department.
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Number 107 is reappointing a member and an alternate member to the Ulster County Planning Board for the City of Kingston.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. 109 is reappointing a member to the Ulster County Planning Board from the town of 108, appointing alternate member to the town of Ulster. Ulster County Planning Board for the town of Ulster.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. 109 is reappointing a member to the Ulster County Planning Board for the town of Worsing. All in favor?
No.
Move. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And then we're going to go on to 110. This is supporting a grant application to New York State Department of Transportation to apply, accept, and administer public transportation modernization and enhancement funding for bus and bus facilities, capital investment program, and authorizing Ulster County Executive to execute any required applications or agreements to accept funding, Department of Public Transportation, UCAT.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Hold on.
Did you want to talk about that?
I can if you want me.
That's
to.
The my bus chargers? Is that the new bus charger?
this one is different. So my name is Sasha Ahmed. There's a few new people here. I've dealt with some of the legislators in the past. I'm the acting director of UCAT. The first resolution tonight that we have is for state funding. It's modern. It's called the Modernization Investment Grant. It's an allocation that we get from the state every year. There's no county dollars associated with it, and we're using it for charging equipment and electronic trash collection. If you have any questions about it, let me know. There'll be another set of resolutions around it, probably the next cycle, to amend the budget, but it's not a competitive grant. It's allocated.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to 111, which is authorizing the chair of the county legislature to execute a customer project commitment with the New York State Power Authority for the implementation of an electric bus charging infrastructure phase one and amending the 20-25 capital program and establishing capital project 568, Department of Public Transportation, Ulster County Area Transit.
So moved.
Second.
So I just want to make a comment. I was shocked at how much this is costing, this charging station. I was shocked at the cost of this.
That it's expensive? Or
yes, very, very expensive. It was like $400,000, right, to build
this. Supercharge for the buses.
Yeah. I mean, I was just amazed that it was so expensive.
This one's 256.
All right, so 256, yeah. But even so.
Yeah, the share of is 256. The cost of the total project, I think, is $700,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing to me.
It includes the trenching, that it includes the transformer upgrades that need to be done. The buses themselves, Dr. Wright was with us on one of the trips that we just took on during the RFP process. Those will be another set of resolutions, which is why I thought it was important for me to be here. It's a complicated process. It's the buses themselves are $1 million, so the charging equipment that accompanies them is also very expensive. We're lucky that we're not having to use any county dollars for this project, but as Dennis can attest to as well, we're now in the process of doing two studies that'll look at fleet electrification as a whole, and as well as electrification if we, you know, have a facility out in Pine Hill, if we could charge over there, and just looking at the county as a whole and how to go forward with the electrification of the fleet. And just a little background on electric buses. There are not that many that have been deployed in New York State, because New York State is a little bit late to the distribution of Volkswagen funding from the settlement that was made with the Volkswagen company in 2018. So we are first in line for that funding, and that's how we are getting some of these upgrades at all.
New tobacco money, huh?
No.
I know. we had a big settlement from tobacco that lasted for years and years and years.
We still used it.
We still have it.
This unfortunately won't last as long, but it will get us our first three electric buses, which it's looking like will be delivered in 2021 sometime.
Okay.
If you have any questions about that, please let me know.
What's the life expectancy of that charging station? Do you know off the top of your head? I know that we're doing this with the state money. I understand.
It's 12
that.
Years.
12,
that's 12 to 15 years. We hope longer. They are trying to kind of universalize the charging infrastructure, so you're not going to need, for example, a Tesla has a special charger. So the bus manufacturers are a little bit different. There are only three or four bus manufacturers that are around that are American and comply with Buy America clauses that the federal government imposes on purchases like this. So they have to, in order to use this type of capital grant money to make any capital acquisition, it has to have a useful life of a decade or longer.
Brian.
Yes, go ahead.
Sasha, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a substantial portion of the cost is not the chargers themselves, but the electrical system upgrades that are needed to just handle that voltage. And so
The cost of the work is included with there was a mini bid process that NYPA conducted already. The chargers themselves are about $150,000. But it's for the actual contractors to come on site. They have to be obviously licensed electricians and engineers that will come onto the site. We're working very closely with the Department of the Environment. But the actual upgrades to the transformers is being done for free by Central Hudson. It's done for free with the expectation that we'll be, you know, paying them later.
Yep.
But it is a good time to do this now. We're looking closely at what's going on at CDTA, Capital District Transit Authority. They just deployed their first four electric buses. The major concern in climates like ours is that how do they perform in the cold? Because the heater is actually a huge drain on the electric battery.
Can I ask a financial question? So if it has a 12-year life expectancy, and I'm not sure about the buses, will we see the savings and be able to replace those when their useful life is over?
Very complicated question.
Yeah.
The answer right now is we should. I think the initial deployment is obviously more expensive because of the training costs, and this is the first, I think the buses that were that we looked at during the RFP process are the second kind of models of these buses, but they haven't really been, you know, Canada has a lot, so that's another place we'll look to see how they perform in the cold. But it's also small transit agencies don't usually get them, so that's the other consideration that you have to make. They perform better if you have really skilled drivers, so those. Another thing, so your question, going back to your question, was will we be able to replace them? The laws that the governor passed during the last cycle, the answer to that is yes, I think we have to, based on, you know, the elimination of diesel vehicles on the road. So, yes, and they are becoming, they're decreasing in price, and they, you know, new diesel buses are increasing in price and getting up to about $500,000, and the price of just the bus with no bells and whistles or training is quoted at around $750. So they're going to achieve that already soon. So yes, I think so.
So we should have a bus building plant here.
Right? There is one in New York for one of the electric bus manufacturers. So
thank you very much. Is there any other questions? Okay, thank you. So we have resolution 133.
We didn't vote on 111 yet.
I'm sorry. All in favor?
We moved and seconded.
Yes.
We
voted.
Right. So all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, so 133 is authorizing the chair of the legislature to enter into an agreement with the D&H Canal Historical Society for the 2020 appropriation from the county legislature.
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
I have to abstain.
Oh, okay.
Because of employment.
Okay. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 134 is authorizing the chair of the legislature to enter an agreement with the Hudson River Maritime Museum for the 2020 appropriation from the legislature.
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. So, we've got a couple of pieces of old business. One's been taken care of already. Dr. Wright, I'm going to start calling you Dr. I apologize for that. Dr. Wright was already spoke to her part there. And then I'll just give a real quick update on the Otis Street mapping issue. It's actually resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's resolved. Yeah, it's all. It's all.
Who did this?
I don't know how it happened. I joined a users group. So I joined a users group, right? And, you know, so that's how you get directly in touch with the programmers, right? So I joined a users group and I got in a conversation with a couple of guys and said, look, this is what's going on. I'm a county legislator. This is my district. Look at this map. This pin is on somebody's house. This is not the family court. And if you look at a map, it's the dead end. So within a few days, it was fixed. You know, and the town and the county got together and put some signs up at the end of the street.
They moved family court, right?
Yeah. So
they moved family court.
They moved family court and DSS.
We've done that already, Dennis.
No, I got through that.
So is there any? We do have a little bit of new business here. I was just asked to announce that the there'll be a public hearing on a uniform tax exemption for the Ulster County IDA is holding a public hearing for the uniform tax exemption policy and a pilot matrix, and that will be taking place March 9th, 7 o'clock p.m. at the City Kingston Common Council Chambers. And I would encourage this committee especially to try and make that if you can.
All of you should have gotten this letter in the mail, but
well,
if you need it again.
A copy of the
actual proposal.
Yeah. Right. If you need it again, let me know.
Yeah. Is there any other new business?
Yeah. Brian, if I can, I just want to make the legislature aware of the census work that's going on, and you should see some of this very, very recent, very soon with respect to the census 2020. It's one of the resolutions that you voted on today was money for that public outreach. But beginning mid-March, you're going to see essentially packets be coming out. They won't be postcards. They'll just be little mailings that for most of you. It'll depend upon where you live. The hard-to-count areas may actually get postcards and full packets. But there will be outreach beginning, I think, in New Paltz with respect to the apartments in New Paltz. Not the dorms, but the actual apartments that students live in. That will begin. April 1st is not necessarily census day, but it is a census of key date for the census in terms of if you have certain issues with respect. It used to be it was where you lived on April 1. It's a little bit changed with respect to this census, but it is a key date for some people in terms of where you live, et cetera, et cetera. For those folks that have newborn babies in hospitals, if April 1, they're still in a hospital, they're counted as at your residence. If you're pregnant, it actually counts. You can actually count it. We're going to do quite a bit of broad outreach. I would ask all of you to essentially urge people. It's safe, it's easy, it's secure, and it funds a lot of the things that Ulster County uses with respect to your parks, your playgrounds, your schools, et cetera. There's a lot of federal money that is dependent upon the census. Anybody ask you or has questions about whether they should fill out the census, have them reach out to Jennifer Clark from the county attorney's office. She's the head of our complete count committee. But if you could be census ambassadors for us, it would really help. We will be getting you some materials so that you have them very shortly. We're going through our own logo development right now in terms of developing a County of Ulster logo for the census. You're going to see some, hopefully we're going to, if we get funded, we're going to see some billboards that go up, and you're going to see quite a bit of material come out from us with respect to down in the lobby at certain county buildings, in at the communities and libraries, etc. So it's quite a big push with respect to trying to get a complete account out, and really appreciate if you folks could help us relative to ensuring your constituency that it's okay to fill out the census, and it's important to do so.
So will this be done bilingually?
Yes. Actually, there's, I think there's like 50-some languages that the census will be translated into.
Okay. Especially people concerned about housing want to fill these out.
Sure, yeah. Because it does also influence some of the housing funding that the county is eligible for.
Right.
You should put them on the UCAP buses.
We are. We're actually going to wrap buses. We have we've worked to try to identify those buses that are available to us that don't have current wrappings on them. There's about five. And we'll wrap those buses. It's in our budget to wrap those buses. We've also had a proposal from Timely Signs to do that as well. So, yes.
Legislator Archer?
And you're going out and communicate. I mean, are you doing anything through newspapers or public service? Or
We're required to spend about 75% of our grant through the nonprofits. So we're reaching out to all the nonprofits, 21 libraries, mm-hmm. plus special funding for the libraries in Ellenville and in Kingston because they're hard-to-count areas. And we've also had a conversation with the Supervisors Association about their participation in the census as well. But it's an important thing for us to essentially be confident that people can fill them out and that there's not going to be any repercussions. To date, there has been...
And the importance, though, of what it means for
absolutely.
The community
yeah.
is what
yeah.
if we get back in yeah. federal funding, et cetera.
And the yeah. executive team is now working on the yeah. executive Pardon team me. Is now working on that messaging. So they're working on that messaging as well as how that outreach goes out.
Thank you. So now I'm going to open the floor for public comment. If any of the members of the public would like to say anything, now's the time you can flip it.
Go ahead.
So is this
going
to hear me?
I'll just
like,
it's up
I
here.
Mean, it's all
the way. No, you're fine.
First, I do appreciate that you're adding a public comment period to this meeting. I don't believe there was one previously, although I think it should be in the beginning of the meeting, because having public comment after you've already voted and taken action on several things and then allowing the public, it's like, well, the public should be able to weigh in on the things that you will be discussing and voting on. So I really think that should be moved. I understand you might have to put a time limit on that as you do in a legislature meeting, but I really think that should be moved to the beginning of the meeting. I do also want to stress that, you know, I think it's great that the executive's office is doing a committee and doing research and studying housing. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I do want to just kind of stress that the legislative and the executive are two separate branches. And so there's no reason there can't be things happening on both levels. And obviously we'll see how this goes, and that hopefully there's great cooperation between the two branches and everything's great. But, like, please be open to, you know, maybe there's something that committee isn't covering, and we'll see that once it gets rolling, and be like, oh, you know, this kind of thing is lacking. Well, maybe the legislature can have a committee and take care of that component of it. You know, so just please be open to
that's
that.
A good idea, actually. Subcommittee.
Also, I also want to say, I'm sorry, but the executive is not your boss. The public is your boss. We elected you. He's the executive, but again, as a separate branch of government. If anybody's your boss, it's David Donaldson right now, because you elected him to be your chair, so he's like kind of your boss, but really the public is your boss. Just want to say that too. Also, as far as municipalities and building departments,
I mean, apparently you don't know my wife.
Yeah, no, I know, and I'm just saying, like, he's not your boss, guys. Like, don't do what he tells you, do what I tell you. Anyway, so when it comes to municipalities, and I mean the royal eyes and, like, the public, not just me, the public in general, with redundancies and municipalities and the mechanisms that are in place as far as building departments, well, the building departments enforce law. Again, it's a different branch of government, sort of. So the building department enforces things, but they enforce laws that are put in place by legislatures. They enforce federal law, they enforce state law, they enforce local municipal code, but they don't make the code. So in order for them to enforce the laws, you have to make them. So regarding the absentee landlord laws and all of that stuff, hopefully maybe that will be taken up Again, I hope we don't lose this because it's super important. Again, I don't know if you guys have heard about what's going on with the Chestnut Mansion apartments, like that kind of stuff. And this, that's not the sole example. It's just what we know is going on right now. So
these are not anomalies. Every one of these things are not anomalies.
Exactly. They're rampant. It's really, really important to have as many laws as possible to protect tenants. And so you need to pass laws in order for building departments to enforce them. And I don't think that that's... I think just saying, hey, building departments, do your job. Because the fact of the matter is, and I'm sure you can attest to this too, I'm sure you talk with other building departments, is a lot of these departments are very understaffed. And so sometimes, like, they can barely, especially where they're required to do annual inspections, I mean, sometimes they can barely have the staff to keep up with those inspections, and that's if everything's hunky-dory dandy, which, of course, obviously, that never is always the case. So that first they have to do all the inspections, and then they have to follow up on those inspections. So sometimes it is a matter of understaffing, and so, you know, whatever the county can do to supplement what they do, I think, is great, and I don't see that as a conflict, and I don't see that necessarily as a redundancy. The building department is the kind of after the fact thing. You know, as you said, first you go to the owner. You know, it's kind of thing like in the workplace. Like if you got an issue with a coworker, you go to the coworker first. If that doesn't work, you go to the boss. If that doesn't work, you go to the boss's boss. Same thing. You know, you go to the owner, but if the owner doesn't respond to you, then you go to the building department. But if you have someone who is either on site or within the county that you can go to as the responsible party, whether or not they're the landlord, you can get the issue remedied before having to wait for the building department to then have to take this landlord to court and fine them and this, that, and the other thing. When you have a leak, when you have no hot water, no heat, like you need those issues remedied faster than sometimes the building department is able to do. So having someone requiring that absentee landlords have someone here locally can really help mitigate that problem on the county level, just like it has with Kingston, just like it has with New Paltz. I want to point out, now I stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, but I don't say it for two reasons. One, I am not a religious person, but I do believe in religious freedom. And the fact that the words "under God" are still in the Pledge of Allegiance, even though this is a country that was founded on religious freedom, I think is one really great reason not to say the pledge. Second, I and many, many other people in this country recognize that there is not freedom and justice for all. And to shame a woman of color who has to deal with sexism and racism every day, who above all else knows that there's not freedom and justice for all right now in this country, should not be shamed or pointed out for not standing or saying the pledge. It is a First Amendment issue. It is their First Amendment right to stand and say the pledge, or to not stand and say the pledge, or to stand and not say the pledge, or whatever. And I fully believe that, and as a country that talks about freedom and freedom and justice for all, I mean, we should be protecting our First Amendment rights, and people should not feel, and not to mention asking people that, you know, not to sit at the table or, like, I'm sorry, but our taxes.
All right, do you have anything that's pertinent to this committee other than criticizing the members?
No, I mean, I think that's pertinent to the committee. It's okay. Not a, you know, I'm pointing out that as, you know, I don't think that that is a good way to conduct
the
meeting. And again, you know, our taxpayer money pays for these chairs and these tables and your stipends, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that that was handled in an appropriate way.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything else to say?
Okay. I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thanks, Irby.
And we adjourn at 7:38. Yes, sir.